This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
I know you told your friend you're not okay, and tell me what's wrong and why you never said you felt that way. And guess you're trying to stay strong and fake a smile until I look away. But I've known you too long, it hurts to watch your blue eyes fade to gray as you fade away.
In the Prairie Province of Alberta, in the Peace River region, is a small town of just less than 3,000 people, and in the late 1990s, it had a handful of general practitioners or family doctors that was serving a rural population of families in the town of Fairview and in its surrounding areas as well. Now, being physicians made them prominent citizens, being that they were considered well-educated and their relationships that they built in those communities really mattered. And in this small town medical ecosystem, as it were two very different personalities. Dr. Douglas Snyder, who was a family physician in his late 50s, was described in the media as well-liked by his patients and deeply embedded in the community. Dr. Snyder, or Douglas, had struggled with alcoholism earlier in his life, and according to his family, he had worked very hard to get over that. And his struggles were also known to the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Alberta, but that he had overcome his issues with drinking, and so he was employed in good standing by the end of the 1990s. And then there was Dr. Abraham Robert Cooper, who was often referred to as Abe Cooper in most of the reporting. He was a little bit different. He was newer to the community. He was described as abrasive, litigious, and at times rude, antagonistic, and somewhat abusive towards his colleagues. And over a period of several years, Abe and some of the other doctors in Fairview clashed a bit about their practice style and some hospital privileges and some of the procedures that he was doing. And in 1993, Dr. Cooper had his admitting privileges at the Fairview Hospital revoked after there had been some internal complaints from hospital staff, and he would spend some subsequent years appealing some of those decisions and suing colleagues in civil litigation that he said had damaged his practice. Now, what I do want to say is that I don't know the actual background of these civil cases, because they never wind up going anywhere. So I don't know if they were about malpractice on Abe's end or what the circumstances of those lawsuits were. I just know that there were a number of lawsuits filed and that Dr. Cooper had been accused of something, and then that is why he had his hospital privileges revoked, but I don't know the specifics. Now, this background of grievances and escalation became not just a matter of workplace rivalries, but that Dr. Cooper and Dr. Snyder had developed a rather intense personal animosity towards each other. It left a simmering feud with Dr. Cooper, Abe's hospital privileges being revoked, and these lawsuits filed against him that Dr. Cooper felt that he was being ganged up on by specifically Schneider, what he considered to be sort of the ringleader of haters against him for no reason, in his opinion. On the evening of May 5th, 1999, Douglas Schneider got a call from Abe saying that he was ready to talk to him reasonably. And so Douglas told his wife that he was going to be meeting Dr. Cooper, Abe, at Cooper's clinic. And this meeting was to discuss this $1.2 million lawsuit that Abe was filing against Douglas and two of the other doctors at the hospital. And this legal dispute had escalated over the period of several years before that. And Abe told Douglas over the phone that he wanted to discuss it in person and that maybe they could work it out between them once and for all. So Dr. Schneider kissed his wife goodbye and then got into his car and left. But he didn't return home the next morning. So around 7 a.m., his wife reported him as missing. Now, she had tried, obviously, calling around to family and friends in a futile effort to locate him, like where he could possibly have gone. And she knew it wasn't like him to go off on the ruse of some mundane meeting only to leave, like leave town forever with none of his belongings. And seeing that he was a rather prominent figure in the community, his disappearance was immediately taken very seriously. In fact, over the coming days, the community itself arranged their own searches for him in addition to police searches. So obviously the first step for police was to go to Dr. Cooper's clinic and ask Abe about the circumstances of their meeting. Like, did he arrive? How long did he stay for? And did he maybe say where he was going to go next, et cetera, et cetera. Only when they arrived at his office, it was pretty apparent that Dr. Douglas Schneider likely met a rather horrific end at Abe's office. There was what was called in the reporting evidence of significant blood loss. That was in the office. There was also a scalpel handle that had some blood on it. So as smart as a doctor needs to be to complete medical school, obviously it does not take the ability to plan or like janitorial skills. Now, upon some further searching, there were also blood stains found in Abe's car, including in the trunk, and blood on his running shoes, all of which would later come back tying Douglas's DNA to those bloodstains. So this is sounding like an airtight case that Abe killed Douglas with probably a scalpel, creating quite a bit of blood loss, and all the DNA that they found places Douglas at the scene. But what they didn't have was Douglas's body. Now, they also found in their search of Dr. Cooper's office, there was this letter or document of sorts. Like, I guess it was more like an affidavit than anything. And it was signed by Douglas stating that he, as in Douglas, had been involved in a conspiracy against Abe Cooper. Now, coincidentally, Abe decided that the day after Douglas disappeared, that was a good time to get on a plane to Florida for a medical convention. And he stayed away for 10 days, I guess thinking things would blow over in that time. It did not. The police continued to collect their evidence and try to piece together a timeline that ended with Dr. Schneider's murder, despite the fact that there was no body that had been found. And they also continued to look very hard for his body, but without anything to go on, like where it could possibly be. It was kind of like looking for a needle in a haystack. So Dr. Cooper, Abe, flew into Edmonton around the 15th of May and then returned to Fairview and then just kind of went about his business. Like, he reopened his clinic and he saw patients until on the 26th of May, when he was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Now, the police were of the impression that the evidence that they did have supported a theory that a homicide had taken place and that the amount of blood that they found meant that Douglas Schneider was dead. Now, Abe Cooper pleaded not guilty, and he came up with a strikingly different narrative to describe the story. His defense argued that Douglas had faked his disappearance to frame Cooper, or that Douglas had left of his own accord. And they argued this both in court and to the media that Abe He consistently denied killing Douglas and suggested that Douglas might still be alive, and if they couldn't produce a body, they couldn't 100% say that he was even dead to a certainty. And without his being dead conclusively, there was no proof that a crime had even been committed. Now, that defense and an absence of the body would be very central to their trial strategy, because if a reasonable doubt could be raised about whether Douglas was dead at all, or whether the blood evidence could be maybe explained away by belonging to someone else, which I would think would be decidedly harder with the whole DNA thing, but still hopeful. I mean, DNA is, at the time, was a fairly new science. Juries sometimes found it confusing. And if they could find all that, then Cooper can avoid a conviction. But the prosecution had the information that they had gathered by the RCMP, who were the ones that were leading the investigation. And they felt that this evidence pointed to a certainty that not only was Douglas Snyder dead, but that he had been murdered, and the evidence put him in contact, or at least in the presence, of Dr. Cooper at the time of his murder. So investigators had recovered bloodstains at Cooper's clinic and also in his vehicle, and the DNA testing had established that at least some of those blood traces belonged to Douglas Snyder. And in addition, some of the other bloodstains showed a mixture of DNA that was consistent with both Douglas's blood and Abe's blood. So this was an evidentiary detail that the Crown or the prosecution argued that was consistent with a violent confrontation that had taken place at Abe Cooper's office. And that scalpel handle that was found with some blood traces on it that was had been left on a table that was in Cooper's clinic. Now, the presence of a scalpel in a doctor's office on its own might not be suspicious, but having blood on an implement in a private office where surgeries and invasive procedures are not normally done kind of raises some questions about the circumstances that it would have been used and why it had been left there. Now, the blood found in Abe's trunk, that was linked to Douglas Snyder. It was going to be difficult to get around that because it strongly implied that not only was there some violence involved, but that there was likely movement of a body in the trunk. And then there was the fact that Abe Cooper had traveled to Florida the day after Douglas had disappeared, which is suspicious 101 on its own, a little bit incriminating. But then to come back and then try to act all normal, like taking patience, was a pattern that really was incriminating. I mean, you're taking patients while your office is being investigated by the RCMP. I don't think that's particularly a great look. So taken together, the prosecution argued that all of these things supported that Douglas had been killed at or near Cooper's office on May 5th, 1999, and that Cooper had disposed of the body. Which I would think is a pretty good guess in my book, but no body cases were actually very difficult to prosecute in the early 2000s and before that. The law took that whole reasonable doubt thing pretty seriously back then. Now, the defense, of course, attempted to rebut all of these arguments, of course. They suggested that maybe Douglas had left voluntarily, that the blood evidence could have been planted or maybe misinterpreted. And they also were able to find a couple witnesses that thought they saw Douglas after he had disappeared, and that all of that created doubt about whether or not Douglas had been actually killed at all. The defense also leaned heavily on the theme that Cooper had been the victim of this long-running conspiracy by the other doctors in the area, which is a little bit weird because it was actually Dr. Cooper that was the one that was launching a lot of the lawsuits and harassing people and being all grumpy about things.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
But the trial began, and locals, and in fact, people across the country, were actually really interested in how this was all going to play out. It was drama, right? It was a workplace feud. There was forensic science, which was just kind of starting to become part of true crime narratives in a little bit more detail. And of course, there was no recovered body, and it all created drama and intrigue for the spectators and for any of us true crime buffs. The prosecution's narrative was pretty straightforward. I mean, it was a planned or deliberate killing that occurred in Cooper's office. He had left blood evidence behind, and his travel to Florida suggested what they considered consciousness of guilt. And so taken together, all that evidence came to a conviction for homicide, and that it had been planned and deliberate, which is first degree. And then that, of course, comes with an automatic life sentence. The defense, though, they wanted to kind of like invert that story, that Douglas's disappearance was not, in fact, proof that he was dead. The blood evidence could have been explained away or planted, and that it was this community of doctors that had some reasons to conspire against him. So while the prosecutor initially charged for first-degree murder, the juries were instructed on some alternative verdicts that they could come up with, which is in accordance to Canadian criminal law. So in such cases where the evidence of an actual death or cause of death is argued, juries can convict of second-degree murder, manslaughter, or they can acquit entirely, depending on whatever elements they feel are proved beyond that reasonable doubt. So the trial judge provided the jury with some legal instructions that included the lesser offense of manslaughter, which is conduct that causes a person's death but lacks the specific intent or planning that is required for murder. And that legal framing kind of mattered because the prosecution was pressing for the first degree murder. But of course, the juries were permitted by law to find him guilty of manslaughter if they concluded that the murder had not been premeditated, or if there were some other parts of first-degree murder that had not been established. So witness testimony included accounts from Fairview residents, hospital staff, there were friends and family of Douglas Snyder, who painted Abe as someone who repeatedly clashed with the entire local medical establishment. He used harsh language. He had been the subject of some formal complaints. But the defense was able to produce some witnesses who insisted that Douglas might actually have left of his own. And they were able to find these truck drivers that thought they saw someone matching Douglas's description at a truck stop in British Columbia after the time that he had disappeared, which was evidence that the defense argued pointed to the possibility that Douglas had actually staged his own death. So the jury was kind of left to weigh these competing accounts of the same story against the physical evidence that they had of the blood and the DNA. And after several days of deliberation, the jury returned a verdict on the manslaughter charge, and that was in October of 2000. So the jurors had accepted that Dr. Snyder had in fact been killed and that Abe had been the one that had caused his death, but they weren't convinced beyond any reasonable doubt that the killing had been planned or met with what is considered the statutory definition of first-degree murder. Now, the sentencing, the appeals, and the exact prison terms kind of vary in the reporting across a number of different sources. Some of the reports say that he was sentenced to 7 years and 4 months, which is 88 months total, with his release reported being in February of 2008. But some other articles say that it was actually a 10-year sentence. But regardless, he was released in February of 2008. What they also confirm beyond any reasonable doubt is that Abe was convicted in October of 2000 and that he appealed. And the Court of Appeal of Alberta dismissed his first appeal in October of 2002. And then he filed a second appeal with the Supreme Court of Canada, and that one was dismissed in August of 2003. It is often really difficult for juries to convict in cases where there is no recovered body, like these, they're called no-body homicide cases, because without a body, it can be a lot harder to rule out that they left voluntarily or that there was some other explanation for a missing person and that they're actually still alive. But Canadian courts have allowed convictions in the no-body cases where the circumstantial and the forensic evidence is compelling enough to decide that a person was killed and that the accused person was the one that caused that death. So in Fairview, the blood evidence that had been found in his office and the DNA results that had tied Dr. Snyder to Dr. Cooper suggested that there had been a violent encounter and that there was enough animosity between the two men that there was probably a violent confrontation. But they convicted on the manslaughter, even though there was no body recovered, because they felt that they couldn't tell who had started the argument that led to his death. So they had concluded that there had not been the premeditation established beyond a reasonable doubt, and that was what was required for a first-degree murder conviction. So that was why it was manslaughter. So during his appeal process, there were several legal issues that kind of came up in pretrial and appellate proceedings that made the case of interest beyond just kind of the true crime drama it provided. And one of them was jury composition. There had been an argument about it. So Abe's lawyers had asked the trial judge at the time of the trial to exercise this statutory power that they could excuse in advance any potential jurors who were healthcare professionals, because they argued that physicians or nurses wouldn't be able to be impartial when they heard like technical medical testimony and the fact that the accused was himself a doctor. But the Court of Queen's Bench denied that application. They felt that that was too broad of an exclusion and that it would improperly make findings of fact about a class of citizens that, you know, trial courts just couldn't make those kinds of decisions on their own. So they had to rely on, basically they had to challenge the jurors for cause or do preemptive or strikes instead on them. And of course, there was a lot of legal discussion about how no body prosecutions are argued or even brought before the courts. But it did not answer the question of where Douglas Snyder's body is. And that is a question that Abraham Cooper has refused to answer even after his conviction and all his appeals were done. Like, he just could not give Douglas's family that closure, either out of spite or a narcissistic Darvo response, which is something that narcissists love. It's deny, attack, reverse victim and offender. He also didn't answer the hovering question of how a simple workplace feud could turn into a killing, especially between two doctors with that whole do no harm thing that they have to promise to do. Douglas's family has spoken publicly about the pain of losing a brother and a husband and all of that, and about their desire for answers. Hazel Magnuson, who's Douglas's sister, she actually appeared in a medical journal that, and also in some promotional material for a book that she wrote. It was called A Doctor's Calling, A Matter of Conscience, that talks about her brother's life and the family's grief over his death. But argues for some improvements in the systems of physician regulation and in trying to protect doctors and professionals who are targets of any kind of threatening behavior. She says, quote, "Our family continues to grieve the loss of a precious loved one, but it is especially difficult to accept that my brother's life was taken by a medical colleague whom he should have been able to trust," end quote. Now, I think the element of this case that haunts me the most in particular is that Douglas Schneider's body has never been located. And in many homicide prosecutions, the body is really what kind of ties the story together. And the fact that they didn't have a body managed to sort of bolster the defense's idea that maybe he wasn't actually dead, and this speculation went on for a few years. And some people continued to wonder whether maybe Douglas had fled and he had staged his own death in order to frame Abe. Maybe the investigators hadn't really searched enough to find his body, or they hadn't searched in the right places. And the police never really followed up on a lot of tips and leads. Now, to be fair, most of them were pretty faint leads and not all that reliable anyways, but just imagine what that's like for a family, that this faint hope and this unresolved grief, because people just keep bringing it up, that maybe, just maybe, he's still out there and he's still alive. Now, as a result of this particular case, it has been cited in medical literature as an example of what can happen when complaints and conflicts that happen between physicians are not properly managed. And of course, Dr. Hazel is advocating for that. She has wanted better systems to protect doctors that are the targets of this kind of disruptive behavior, and to manage relationships between those colleagues who conduct themselves in this kind of way to be a part of workplace safety. The case has also been quoted in case law in support of prosecutions where there is no body, but where there is circumstantial and forensic evidence that is compelling enough that a person has been killed, which is kind of actually a double-edged sword. I mean, it protects communities by allowing prosecutions that are based on forensic proof of somebody being dead, but it requires very careful jury charging and instruction. And of course, the appellate courts like to scrutinize it because of the possibility of some errors. Like if you do fake your own death, just be really careful not to frame someone for your murder. And I think that's probably maybe good advice to end on here. And that was the murder of Dr. Douglas Schneider. And I'm going to be back again in another week with another terrible, awful case. Hopefully it's very interesting. And in the meantime, you do your thing, whatever you decide to do. There are things out there that you can do if you want to. You do not have to. And again, as always, I say thank you so much for listening.
I know you told your friend you're not okay. And tell me what's wrong and why you never said you felt that way. You're trying to stay strong and fake a smile until I look away. But I've known you too long, it hurts to watch your blue eyes fade to gray.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.